WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. My guest, Robert Olin Butler, won last year's Pulitzer Prize for Fiction for his book A Good Scent from a Strange Mountain. This collection of short stories was written in the voices of Vietnamese emigres living in Louisiana, where Butler lives and teaches creative writing. Butler was an army translator in Saigon during the war. His eighth novel has just been published. It's called They Whisper. The subject is sexual desire. The novel is written from the point of view of a man totally preoccupied with his past sexual relationships and his current sexual predicaments.
They Whisper is a serious literary novel about the nature of physical intimacy between men and women. It's written in the first-person voice of a man moving into middle age, trying to understand this comprehensive and ravishing hold that women have on him. And in fact, he's trying to understand that sort of inner landscape that he carries around inside him all the time, a landscape wherein dwells every woman he's ever loved, from little ways to great ways. And he accesses these people in his meditation, these women, in an interesting way, because as a reflection of and an expression of his intimacy and his love for these women, he feels he has access to their inner voices. And in fact, he lapses into the first-person voices of all of these women. So the book is woven full of the voices of the women that he loves.
Is there something going on in literature that several serious writers at more or less the same time are trying to explore sexuality in serious books, but in very explicit ways? And I'm thinking, you know, you won the Pulitzer Prize, and your next book is about sexuality. Richard Rhodes won the Pulitzer Prize and then went to write a sexual memoir. John Updike's recent memoir, Memories of the Ford Administration, has a lot of sexuality in it. It's territory he's looked at many times in his books.
And Brazil is
His latest novel. And then Nicholson Baker has had two novels in a row. Now, these are all very different writers, and you may or may not care for the finished products that they've written, but still you've got a whole bunch of serious writers writing explicitly about sexuality in, you know, perhaps in ways that haven't been written before.
The curious thing is that it's taken us this long to do that.
Uh-huh.
If you ask literate people sitting around talking, let's start naming all the serious literary novels we can think of about war. You'll have
lots
in
of
half
them.
An hour, yeah. 200 titles.
We'll
or let's talk about let's all the serious literary novels about family relationships. You'll have 700 of them in no time flat. Let's list all the serious literary novels, not just that have sex in them, but actually directly address the nature of sexuality. And you're not going to use more than the fingers on that one proverbial hand. And that's the odd thing to me. Not that there are several of us writing about this now, but you know, where have we been all this time?
Was there a process for you of figuring out the language you would use in your book? And I don't know if you read a lot of pornography at any point in your life, but that's the language that's typically been used in books because there's been not that much serious writing about more explicit sexuality. So in figuring out like what kinds of words you were going to use to describe body parts and what kind of words you were going to use to describe love and how either like romantic or realistic or pornographic it was going to be.
Well, that's the terrible linguistic challenge, which I think has been, in fact, one of the major inhibiting factors about serious writers writing about this. There are no names for these body parts that actually get at the feelings that we who are serious about sex and take it the kind of sense, the sense of beauty and vulnerability and tenderness and cosmic resonance and the mystery of the personality actually in a way sacramentalized in the shape and form of this of these body parts. Those connotations do not exist in the words that we have for those parts.
Yeah, well, most of the words are kind of crude and often insulting.
Either that, or they're clinical and
right.
and passionless.
Uh-huh.
There's nothing in between. Ira Holloway, my narrator, actually explicitly comes to terms with this linguistic problem in a couple of ways. But here's a passage from the book that deals with that, speaking of that body part of the woman, which he so deeply loves, and loves for its not as an object, but as a kind of sacramentally charged reflection of the individual personality of the woman, and then by extension a resonance into that yearning for cosmic connection that we all have. So Iris says, if the words for a place so softly, so complexly portaled and swirled, a place so prone to weep and joy, seem ridiculously inadequate to me, then what must they seem to a woman? For a woman to have a place at the center of her that she cannot really see, not like my part, which yields its whole shape to the slightest glance, for her to have such a place like the mystery of personality, difficult even for itself to apprehend, for a woman to have a place in her body that gathers a man into it from his deepest yearning, a place that also cries forth a new child into the world, for to her to have such a place, like the mystery of love and desire and the creation of life, I am sure she has no name for it in her truest voice. Just as there are no names for the feelings in myself that I am trying in all of this to understand. I speak now, speak in the ways that I do, because I am ravished with love for this center of a woman's body that has no name, that can't be turned into a thought, that will not yield in any way but through my senses. And so, because I give words to whispers, to sounds like the faint hiss from the edge of the universe, there are these little bits of broken translation where there are no names.
You know something? I think a lot of women think that a lot of men are real fetishists when it comes to women's bodies. That they've made women's bodies, particularly women's genitals, into these shrines at which they worship, into these great mystical something or another's, that is I think, to some women, to some of us, a little much and a little incomprehensible.
Right. Well, that's what They Whisper tries to make that comprehensible, why that is so. I'm trying to articulate the reality of that seriousness with which men take that part of a woman's body. I think the woman would be uncomfortable and is uncomfortable where the worship makes it feel as if that the object has a reality separate from her own self. I mean, it would seem to me that would be the off-putting thing to a woman. You're worshiping this part of my body in such a way that my own self disappears, and that the body part is surely interchangeable with the similar body part on anyone. That would seem to me to be the deep discomfort that would be evoked by that. Ira Holloway, in my book, and I think many, many men, have a deep sense of the individuality of that part in the woman that they love. That it is quite strikingly personal and unique. And in fact, it is. There are no two alike. and Iris sees sex as a kind of secular sacrament. I've used that word because the churches think of sacraments as objects, physical objects, that have a resonance into the cosmic realities. And so it is with that body part.
Still sounds a little like fetishism to me.
Well, no, fetishism surely turns turns the object into a thing unto itself, and that's there's a difference between fetishism, which one certainly should turn away from, and a deep and appreciative response to an individual person.
My guest is Robert Olin Butler. His new novel is called They Whisper. His previous novel, A Good Scent from a Strange Mountain, won the Pulitzer Prize in 1993. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. Novelist Robert Olin Butler is my guest. There's a part where your main character says something to the effect of, I sometimes think that my penis is the most important part of me or the truest part of me. I forget exactly which word you use there. It seems like a lot of men do feel that way, in a way that I think most women don't feel about their own genitals. And it's
that's
something
right.
that's very, I think, confounding to a lot of us.
I know, but there are passages in the book which try to explain that, because what happens is that in the male part, in the act of sex, the sense of it feeling a terrible boundary in a way that then is suddenly broken. But what is gathering behind that boundary, behind that block, really feels for the man ultimately as a gathering of personality. If you are truly engaged in the act of love, if you are making love to a woman who is there in her vivid uniqueness, it feels like all of your mind and all of your emotions and all of your words and all of your creativity and all of your memory, everything is somehow gathering there. And it's all of that that goes out to the woman in the act of sexual release. And so it's the resistance of the notion of fetishism that the book is trying to do. It's a resistance of the objectifying of these parts.
There's a section in this book where I think you're imagining how a woman would respond to what we're talking about now, to this kind of mysticism of the woman's body, right? To making a woman's body into a mystical thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to ask you to read that passage. This is written in a woman's voice. This is the main character, Ira, thinking that he really knows what a woman he's with at that moment is thinking about him.
Exactly.
Let me have you read that.
Right. So this is the woman who Ira is loving, and he hears her voice and then speaks in her voice these words. I'd met him again, and it had all been business, really. Not that I was blind to his flirting. I'm never blind to that sort of thing in men, and it always puzzles me how desperately insecure they all must be to do this so compulsively. It's not me inspiring the attention. It's something about them that looks inward, something that can't even recognize a specific woman there before them. I watch the flirting seize men when almost any woman comes into their presence. A woman, of course, within a certain range of physical attractiveness. The men do it to anyone. And so not only is it not just me inspiring it, it's never me. That's the effect. It's never any of us. It's just them and their own problem, whatever that is. I don't even exist.
What do you think of that?
Well, I mean, I think that is indeed a woman's sense of the way men often flirt, and there's a validity to it. Many men do that. She's entirely right. Ira, my narrator, let's remember, is speaking these words. He understands that too. He is the antithesis of that. But I tell you, I think that many men who flirt like that, compulsively, in a way that sweeps away, seems to, the individuality of the woman who's the object of that flirting, that many of those men are doing that as a kind of discomfort, fear, at the depth of that yearning that they have to connect to women.
Are you embarrassed with people reading your book now? I think it's just an ingrained reaction that if you talk openly about sexuality, whether it's in the form of fiction or in the form of confession, that the response that one expects you to have is of at least slight embarrassment.
I'm not the least embarrassed by the book. The great Japanese film director Akira Kurosawa said, "To be an artist means never to avert your eyes." And that, that's an impulse that if you don't have it, you can't be an artist anyway. So this is a book where I do not expose the literal details of my life, because this book is all the characters in here are created. There's not a single real life counterpart to any of the characters in this book. But my deepest self is certainly nakedly exposed, though it's not my whole self either. This book is not an attempt at a unified field theory of sexuality. Ira is left in a place that is not where he recognizes that he is not whole. And I hope I'm beyond that place, and I have more books to write about this subject.
Robert Olin Butler's new novel is called They Whisper. This is Fresh Air.